You're very welcome along once again to the Greg Hughes podcast. Now imagine being told for months that your physical collapse is all in your mind. 14 years ago, Rosemary McFadden was living through a nightmare. She was losing weight, her energy was gone, and her body was essentially shutting down. Despite the physical red flag, she was told she had depression and anxiety, and was even sent to a psychiatric unit for a condition that was actually attacking her internal organs. It took a chance observation from her sister-in-law to finally see the physical signs, the drop in blood pressure and the distinct darkening of the skin that pointed to a rare life-threatening autoimmune disorder, Addison's disease. Today we're peeling back the curtain on a condition that is as misunderstood as it is dangerous. We'll hear how a lack of knowledge in the medical system almost cost Rosemary her life, and the incredible coincidence during lockdown that led her to meet her manager Sharon, only to discover they were both fighting the exact same rare battle. We're joined by Rosemary and Sharon to talk about living on life-saving steroids, the legacy of famous figures like JFK who hid the same condition, and what it's like to work full-time when your body is constantly under siege. Right, I'm joined on the podcast by Sharon Flanagan and Rosemary McFadden. Thank you very much for joining us. Right, so we're talking about Addison's disease, and I have both of you in front of me, and you both look fantastic and healthy. Is that part of the problem, in that sometimes that's the perception of it?
That's 100%. People will look at you, even family members, and they'll say, wow, God, you look like, you look so well. And that's probably part of the steroid that makes you look so well, because steroid gives you a high colour. It makes you, and you feel good if you if you're taking the right amount and you're taking your proper medication. But when you feel unwell and people don't see you, that's when you look really, really unwell. And that's what we were just chatting about there, Sharon.
That's what we always talk about.
That's your experience as well.
That's definitely my experience. So sometimes you feel that people don't believe, you know, that you're experiencing such symptoms. And when you present to, say, at the start, presented to a GP and would have lost an extreme amount of weight and the fatigue, and they kind of, because they're very non-specific symptoms, the GP kind of, you know, it's hard for them, but they can assess it as more anxiety-based. But actually, it's a very life-threatening condition. And once you get the right medicine and you're on the right dosage, you can live a very good life. But it's up and down every day, because as a normal person, you can, you know, you yourself will produce cortisol as it's needed during the day, whereas myself and Rosemary have to administer the amount we think we need during the day. Now, there's a standard sort of physiological dose that you would take that would kind of cover everybody. But if you get bad news, or say, you know, your child is sick, or even say you're sick yourself, you know, say you get an infection, the steroid you take actually covers it. So sometimes you don't even know you're sick.
You can, but if you have a very bad episode, Sharon, it can get very serious very quickly.
Oh God, yeah.
Be it a physical or an emotional trigger.
Exactly. Now, the thing with it is because there's not a lot of research done on it, and there's about, I think it's about between 2,000 and 3,000 people in Ireland that have it. And it was kind of remarkable how I met Rosemary. We were working together, and one day I had noticed that she had been taking hydrocortisone, which is the hormone that I take. And I thought, because anybody I ever spoke to and I said, I have Addison's disease, they kind of went, you don't know what that is. But I said, have you a condition, an autoimmune condition? And she said, yeah, but I have a really rare one. You probably never heard of it. And then she said, Addison's disease. And my jaw dropped. You know, I thought, but she was managing so well. And I had newly been diagnosed at that time. And I thought, oh, this is great, because there's light at the end of the tunnel. Because I had 12 adrenal crises in that year. I had been in A&E for by ambulance, I don't know how many times, and it's very traumatic for children to see it, because You know, once you lose the ability to produce cortisol and you don't know, you know, are you taking too much or too little, you collapse. Yeah. So that's the
main And you can end symptom. Up in a coma and it can be incredibly...
And it can be fatal, yeah. Which is probably, you know, it drives anxiety through the roof. And I do understand when GPs say, look, this time it's just anxiety, but I have learned over the... I was diagnosed in 2015, so I have learned over that course of time, and so has my husband. I have a husband that is very aware now because, you know, of the condition I have, when it's serious and when it's not serious.
Mm. He's like one of those clever dogs that can almost smell something's up, is it?
He just knows. I'm with him nearly 30.
He just knows you inside out.
I'm nearly 30 years with him, so he knows this one's serious. Okay. And
because it's triggered by anxiety, or it can be a crossover, it's like... Anyway, we'll dig into that a bit more. Rosemary, 14 years you've had your diagnosis, but how long have you been suffering the impacts of Alison's?
So I was working in Dunn's, and I remember I would maybe move from my checkout and I would go down the floor and the sweat would be lashing off me. Mm. And I would go upstairs because I felt uncomfortable, and I would go upstairs, and maybe if somebody was walking along with me, they'd be talking to me, and I'd be going, and out of breath, and I thought, God, this is really weird. And then somebody had remarked then, God, you've lost a lot of weight. Oh my God, I didn't realise you were so slim. And that went on from that. Then I...
Which is a symptom as well, by the way, just to keep the listeners as it go. Unintentional weight loss can be part of this as well.
Yeah, and it's probably because you're sweating so much, you're losing so much fluid. So then I took redundancy because I thought there's something not right with me and I need to maybe changes in my life or whatever. And then I left Dunn's in July, and I remember September, I went for an interview for a job, and I came back home and I thought, I'll have something to eat. And I made a sandwich for myself, and I always enjoyed my food, and I could only eat half the sandwich, and I thought, God, that's really strange, and I felt nausea. So I thought, right, maybe it's a bug. Went on, this continued then right on through November, and I remember taking my father-in-law, him and my mother-in-law, they were going to get a Christmas tree. My father-in-law said to me, he says, are you keeping all right? He says, you've lost a lot of weight. And I said, not really. I said, I don't feel great at all. And he said, well, go to the doctor. So I did go right away. Because one of the main symptoms I was waking at 6 o'clock in the morning with the most dreadful butterflies in my stomach. Mm. Oh my God. I would get up because I couldn't lie. I would get up, I would go downstairs and I would sit. 8 o'clock, I'd ring my mother and I would say to her, God, I don't know what's wrong with me. I have really bad butterflies. I just want to rip them out.
Yeah.
They're that bad. And she would say, oh, maybe you're low in iron. Maybe this, maybe that. Go to the doctor. Went to the doctor, told the doctor the symptoms. You're suffering from anxiety / depression.
Mm. Yeah.
And I thought, right, okay, I don't feel like that. I don't think it's depression.
Was this an internal conversation you were having, or did you say that to the doctor?
I said to the doctor, I find this strange, though. I said, because when I came in here, I was barely able to make it up the stairs. Mm. I said, there's something else going on. So she done my bloods. My bloods came back. Everything was fine.
Crazy.
Now, the only thing they wouldn't have done was the cortisol, because that is only done if specifically it's asked for. So that was fine. She said, I'm going to give you a wee antidepressant. And she said, take these. These will help. Went home and went to bed. Took one of the tablets, and I remember, I don't know now, was it the tablet that done it or what, but I remember calling for Hugh, and I said to him, I think there's something badly wrong with me. I feel like I'm going to die.
Oh, wow.
And he said, Rosemary, pull yourself together. You're fine. Did you take one of them tablets? Maybe take another one. And I said, no. I said, I'm not
taking
anymore.
That's the trigger, yeah. Well,
it felt
like
that was fine. Went on. And the next thing, it came to Christmas then. And I had been back and forth to the doctor in between. So after Christmas, I went back to the doctor and she said to me, she said, do you know what? I'm going to send you up. And it was just up there, mountaintop.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you up for just a wee assessment with the psychiatric doctor. I know him, and we'll get you in there and he'll have a chat with you. So I went in.
Can I just, at that point, right, because in your heart of hearts, you know there's nothing psychological going on here. So you've been prescribed an antidepressant. Lots of people do, and they need them, and that's fine. Yeah. But now you're getting to the point whereby you're going in for a psychiatric assessment. Mentally, you're feeling fine, other than the distress of everything.
Yeah.
How was that making you feel? Because, like, I don't want to use the word, but this is what gaslighting is, when you're told you feel something that you're not feeling, right? At a remote show, God, you're very angry. And you're going, why? I'm not angry. I'm in a really good mood.
Yeah.
But you're being told that your condition is such that we're going to get you psychologically evaluated.
Yeah.
Did you go with it? Were you pushing back? Were you like, maybe I am going mad?
I did. I went up because I thought, God, I really hope this is maybe what is wrong with me.
Yeah.
Because you're desperate at this stage, because there's nothing, there's no specific things being said that this is low in your bloods or whatever. So I went up and I spoke to the doctor, and when I was finished, he said to me, this is not psychological. He says, this is nothing to do with depression.
Well, how did you feel then? Because one thing could have happened. He could have said, oh, right, okay, there's something psychological and we can work on that. And you go, right, there's something. I've got something. And you could be disappointed to hear it's not, or were you like, right, that's confirmation, I knew it wasn't, now we'll try and figure out what it is.
So I thought then, okay, I know what I have. I'm done. I'm finished.
Right.
Because I had lost so much weight. And I thought, this is it. I probably have cancer.
Yeah.
And that then, I just thought, okay, survival mode then is what I went into then. Because I had my son was only, what, I think about 12 at the time. And I thought, right, I don't want to die. And they can't find out what's wrong with me, but I'm nearly sure this is what it is. And you hear of people having tests and tests, and then eventually they find out it's cancer and whatever. So I thought, right. So then it come to a stage that I wasn't even able to walk. I was lying on the couch in the sitting room. I'd get up out of bed. I'd come down. I would lie down on the couch, because every time I stood up, everything went black.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's weird. Why is that happening to me? And it never dawned on me, blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I would lie on the couch, and Hugh just took over, because he had to. If I opened the front door, it was like there was this unmerciful flash of light hitting me when I would open the door in the morning. Because I'd think, right, I'll try and leave Hugh Edward out at school today.
Mm-hmm.
And this light would flash and I would turn him back in.
Oh, was that an emotional light? Or
no, it's a gift.
You get photosensitivity.
Yeah.
Now, Sharon, and we'll pick up as we go. When I notice you're agreeing with an awful lot of what Rosemary's saying in the early diagnosis stage,
it's almost like this is how we gel so well. It's almost like a mirror image of what happened to me. Now, I would suffer anxiety because I, you know, would have lost both my parents when I was 20, 8 months apart. So I did recognise that there was an element of
there's
anxiety.
There's a trauma there that needs to be addressed,
So I was, and I had three children at that time, I have four now. But at that time, your motherly instinct is, you know, you want to be there for them for the rest of your life and you want to protect them. And so any time that I was sick, I put it down to anxiety. So I went to my GP, like Rosemary, I lost an insane amount of weight. Now, I never carried weight anyway before steroids, but this was so bad that my husband's friends would come to the house and say, there's something badly wrong here, you need to get her checked, because I've never seen anything like it. So they kind of, he was kind of brushing it off at the time, which I was as well, as anxiety based. But like Rosemary, when I stood up, I felt extremely unwell, extremely tired, fatigued, and I couldn't, I used to lie in front of the fire. I had no energy whatsoever, and he used to come in from work and he would say, are you there again? You know, you'll need to look about yourself, you know. So I did attend the GP and they agreed that maybe there's a psychological element here, but we're going to do blood tests on you anyway. So my blood test came back that I have autoimmune disease. So I was diagnosed, which it was a relief for me, because I thought, that's the answer. You know, like, I can deal with that and there's medicine for it. And I was diagnosed with systemic lupus, which is normally treated by, you probably know it through COVID, the hydroxychloroquine was the name of the drug. So it's like an anti-inflammatory that once you're given it, but it takes like maybe 2 to 3 months to build up. So whilst they give you that, they give you a steroid as well called prednisolone, which is very, very well known. And it's given to, for many conditions, you know, to take down inflammation in the body. If you've got, say, for example, a chest infection, children get it, you know, soluble versions of it. So they put me on both of those. And then with the intention of when the hydroxychloroquine kicks in, they can take you off.
Taper it. Yeah, they can
take you off the prednisolone. Now, unfortunately, that didn't happen in my case. So there's a problem there because...
And I want to ask you a question specifically in relation to that, but lupus and POTS also, which you were also diagnosed with, are they in the same family
of
Addison's?
No.
So there's not an autoimmune crossover?
There is different types of Addison's disease, okay? Mm. So Rosemary has the autoimmune version.
Okay.
And I have the version that was brought on by taking a steroid for 15 years that I shouldn't have been taking.
Oh, wow. Right.
So it's...
Sharon, but the whole purpose of this conversation is if I'm asking questions and trying to learn, it works for the audience as well. So you didn't have Addison's. So when you were lethargic and you were being treated for depression or what have you.
I had lupus.
Oh, so you had lupus, right?
I had lupus. Okay. So my bloods were very inflamed. There was markers there. I was sent to a private clinic. And because I wanted a quick answer, because it was going on so long and I had children and I felt responsible that, you know, every day that my husband was coming in, I was non-functioning. And it was really bothering me because I always worked all my life.
Yeah.
And it was at a stage of, if this is anxiety like you, put me into a hospital and get me sorted.
Yeah.
So once
you weren't in denial, if it's what it is, fix it.
I mean, it's so debilitating whenever you wake up in the morning and you can't move. You cannot move whatsoever. So the reason that I couldn't move is because my POTS is, so it's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. Once you stand up, your blood pressure falls and your heartbeat goes through the roof. That's normally treated by, you know, dietary changes like a lot of salt. And if that doesn't work, then there is a medicine for it called fludrocortisone, which you're on as well. So there's a lot of crossover with mine. So after about a year, they suspected that I had a cortisol deficiency. I had Addison's disease at that point. So they did the test and it came back negative that I didn't have it, but that I had a mild deficiency.
Okay.
But they didn't put it down to the steroid use. So
this is, so the version you have, tertiary Addison's disease, that was acquired then through being on this drug that was supposed to be tapered. But you were just left on it for 15 years.
I was left on it. And I did go back a number of times. So I wasn't followed up with rheumatology. So there's the different diseases that I have. The autoimmune diseases are treated with rheumatology, which is the lupus, and the POTS is cardiology.
Mm.
Now, endocrine, which deals with diabetes and all of the Addison's disease and all of that. I wasn't even under their care at that point. But once they figured out that I had a mild cortisol deficiency, I was referred then to an endocrinologist here in Letterkenny. And when they did the test and it was negative, they still continued to let me use the prednisolone. And sometimes the doses were, because I was even speaking to somebody during the weekend there who works in neurology, and they said the doses that you were put on were so severe that they could cause organ damage, organ failure, and that was the problem with me. So it could have been reversed at that point, but
how are you angry?
Do you know, I am, because what happened to me last year was I took an insane adrenal crisis in March, and I was suppose there was no endocrinologist in Letterkenny at the time. They were, I think they were trying to interview for one and there wasn't one there. So because Addison's isn't very well known, but I will say paramedics seem to know absolutely everything about it. Any time that we've ever contacted a paramedic, it seems to be on the emergency list of, like, if, is it a cardiac issue or is it a, you know, is it somebody going through chemotherapy that needs assistance? Or it's one of those ones where you have, if it's an adrenal crisis, you have about a half an hour to get the medicine into you before it's coma, fatal.
And I presume the medicine, it's not practical to have an EpiPen type.
I actually have one in my
bag here. So you can carry it with you.
So I was given it because I had so many episodes. My adrenal glands, unfortunately, I don't know if yours are the same, but mine's now are called, or what's called atrophied. So they're completely shrunk. They've got, because they haven't been in use and because they've been suppressed.
They've withered effectively.
They've just disappeared. Yeah. So they sit on top of the kidneys. They control everything in the body. They control especially your stress response. So if you have any triggers, any stress at all, and like we all have stressors in our life.
It's impossible to avoid.
It's really, and you feel like some days, you know, you're your own organ. You're trying to, so you'll get up in the morning and you'll take 20 milligrams of hydrocortisone, say, and then by 11 o'clock you feel really sick because somebody has told you bad news. And then the endocrinologist, Rosemary probably has the same experience, you were going in and you were saying, I have a lot of emotional stuff going on at the moment. You know, I'm worried about my son, or my son took sick, and they would say, but that wouldn't use cortisol. But that is the complete wrong answer. I mean, the major adrenal crises are always caused by emotional triggers.
Cortisol, do you build up a resilience to it, or do we know?
Not really.
Okay, so in other words, it can be a. So at this point, Sharon, and what we'll do is through the course of the next few moments, we'll get us both up to date with having Addison's and life moving forward there. So at what point then were you told that you have Addison's, and will medics accept that it is triggered by the overprescription or overuse of steroids?
So they have. They have. That was the point last year where we got to. So when I arrived by ambulance, I collapsed at the top of the stairs. My husband went to leave the children to school. My youngest is 7, and he never normally comes back after work, after dropping them off. He goes on straight to work. But this day, thankfully, I had gone to the top of the stairs to try and get a phone to ring him to say I'm going to collapse. He knew I was unwell in the bed, but he said, just stay there, you know, you'll be fine. It didn't seem too extreme. Anyway, I was taken in and it went downhill from there. I had lost the power of my legs and I had everything. It was a complete adrenal crisis where my potassium went and my salt went. And when they took all the bloods in Letterkenny Hospital, they tried their best to control it. However, the consultant came and said, we need to transfer you to Galway for specialist care. And unfortunately, at that point, Galway wouldn't accept me because of the danger of passing away in the ambulance on the way there. So I think for insurance reasons, they didn't want to take that risk. So I was really unwell in hospital in Letterkenny. There was no more they could do because they had no endocrine team there, but they did their best. I mean, they were amazing. But they wouldn't take me in Galway. So the consultant pulled my husband, and my sister had flown in from England at this time, and they had pulled them both aside and they said, if it was my wife, I would sign her out now at the moment and take her straight to James's in Dublin, which is what they did. And I got to James's unconscious.
Who actually had to make that call, decision?
My husband and my sister.
And that was presumably in the knowledge that you were deemed to be unfit to go to Galway. Like, that was a brave decision.
I can see, I've since got my medical files because they're looking through them at the moment because of it. And I have seen, you know, just how heavy that must have been on them because, like, he... he had to take the decision knowing that there's four children at home.
It's a gun to your head decision. It's
if I move her, you know, something could happen. Thankfully, where we got there, he has a relative in St. James's. So he met me at the door. I got through without any problem whatsoever, and I got treated there. So they did all the testing, and they regulated all the bloods, and I got out on Good Friday last year. So, because I thought at that stage, when I'm lying flat and getting this there's a test that you do for Addison's and how bad your adrenals have actually got, and it's called a synactin test. So when I got there, they couldn't give me that because I was so overdosed in steroids at that point. They were giving me 440 milligrams of steroid, and 5 is the recommended dose. So I was completely overdosed on it. But anyway, they dried it out. They did the test and they said, listen, unfortunately, your adrenal glands now, because of the exposure of 15 or 10 to 15 years of prednisolone, are unlikely to recover, but we're going to try. So that's what we've been doing the last year. We're trying.
And just before I go back to Rosemary, so when were you clear that I have Addison's this is what I'm dealing with?
So 2016.
Right, so he's going back that far.
Yeah. So I got it after a year of taking prednisolone, and they have accepted that that was the reason that I got it.
Yeah, okay. Rosemary, yours is the different version, because I presume, and I'm not saying this is the right way to approach it, you're eliminating everything else. So I presume ME probably was chucked in there, or all manner of different conditions that some medics think are in your head, some medics take much more seriously. Low blood pressure, is it this, is it that, is it the other? So I presume it's test after test after test until you're left with nothing except what it is. Now, that's not the right way to do it, but is that how it went for you?
No, I then, as I said, I went home, and that's the way I was lying, looking out the window, no eating, sipping at water. And I remember thinking, if I can eat 2 plain biscuits a day, maybe that'll keep me alive. And I can look out the window, and I'll stay alive. And then something unusual happened. My mother had come up and she'd made scrambled egg, and she used to use quite a bit of salt. And I had the scrambled egg, and that was the first time I ate. It was the salt.
Yeah,
I was nearly sucking the salt.
Because you get salt cravings.
Yes, because your potassium, your sodium goes low and your potassium goes high. But at that stage, I didn't know that. So then that was fine. I then went to the doctor. I thought, right, I'm going back to the doctor once more to see what could be wrong. And I went to a different doctor. And he said to me, you tell me what you think is wrong. So I said, I think I have cancer.
Wow.
And he said, why? Well, I said, look at me. And now, like Sharon, I would never have been overweight. I would have been slim, but this was just sick slim.
Yeah,
this was
gaunt just almost, yeah. Malnourished.
And he said to me, he says, but you're, Rosemary, you've always been slim. And I went, no, no, not like this. I said, I am. And I said, I can't stand up. And I thought, maybe he might have taken my blood pressure, and no, nothing was done. He said, I'll do your bloods. So he done my bloods, got a phone call. The next day, I got a phone call and he said, your thyroid is underactive. And I thought, oh my God, would my thyroid cause them kind of problems? So I said to myself, would that be the reason why I am the way I am? And at that stage then, I had thought, oh my God, I haven't peed in nearly 24 hours.
My word, yeah.
And I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, I'm not able to stand up. I said, everything now at this stage is going completely black. Mm-hmm. And I said, I haven't peed for almost 24 hours. And he said, oh, do you know what you do? Come on tomorrow morning. Well, I said, what happens if I don't?
Yeah.
But I had that urge to go to the toilet to pass urine, but I couldn't. And I thought, right, okay, well, he's the doctor. I'm sure if it was dangerous, he would tell me to come in now. And he said, do you know what we'll do? We'll check your blood pressure when you come in as well. But I didn't make it in. The following morning, I got up, I went downstairs, and I just collapsed.
That was the end. Your body had just kept going for as long as it could.
Hugh came in and he said, Rosemary, Jesus, what? You need to go back up to bed again.
Mm.
So he helped me back up. My brother rang in the meantime and he said, he says, how are you feeling today? And I said, Martin, I think I'm done. And he said, touch your lips. And my lips were rock hard. Try. I says, right. He says, you need to be admitted into the hospital. So my sister-in-law was she's a doctor, and she came in later that day and she said, dear God, she says, don't even wait for an ambulance. She said, I can barely get her pulse. Mm-hmm. And her blood pressure is on the floor. So I was rushed down to the hospital. I remember Hugh carried me down the stairs because I couldn't. And I had to lie across my brother and my husband because I couldn't sit up. And they got me in and they got fluids onto me. And what was I told? We're waiting for a bed in the psychiatric unit.
Nice.
Yep.
And that was sheer luck. The following morning, I was put out in the chair because they needed the bed I was on or what I was lying on. And I went. And this nurse came along and she says, dear God, she says, get her onto a bed. She's not able, her blood pressure's so low. Get her onto bed. And they put me into it was just a wee room. And this doctor came along and I remember him pulling back the curtain and he said, what are you here for? And I said, I don't know. I said, I think I'm being moved up to the psychiatric ward. And he said, why? And I told him how I was. And he told me to open my mouth. And he looked into my mouth. And he said, put your elbows up. And I put the elbows up. And he says, have you noticed? And there was like a brown on my elbows. And he said, let me see your knees. And there was the same
this
on my
pigmentation,
knees.
This pigmentation, which, as it turns out.
Now, some people go completely tan, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And he said, have you noticed anything about scars or anything? And I said, funny. And I showed him a scar on my arm had come back. It was brown.
More prominent.
Yeah, the scar had went brown. Most people would kind of go
red. It goes white, all red. Over a long period of time.
So mine was brown.
Okay.
And he said, I'm going to press on your stomach. And he pressed on my tummy. And he said, I know what you have. And I said, what? He says, you have a thing called Addison's disease. He says, I'm 100% sure that's what you have. He says, but I have to do the test. He says, I have to confirm it.
Mm.
Now, this is going from not eating. I hadn't ate probably within maybe, say, 2 months.
Mm.
Just barely eating, just to survive and drinking water. And he took the test. And I remember the Thursday morning, he came in and he said to me, you have Addison's disease. He says, have you ever heard of it? And I said, never. I said, is it treatable? And he said, 100%. And he gave me my first injection and I was sitting up in the evening waiting to eat. I had an appetite to eat.
Your stories are very different to the point of where we're at now, but there's a common theme here as well, in that you were nearly killed by taking so many steroids. And you were nearly killed by no one finding out what was actually wrong with you. Yet one doctor checks your elbows, checks a scar, and is 100% of the diagnosis. Again, I asked Sharon, was she angry? I mean, are you grateful or would you be angry as well? I mean, should we not be expecting more of our health system?
I'll tell you where I feel angry now. And as I said to Sharon, when I went to work and I met Sharon, I was in control with my Addison's, everything. I felt great.
You were amazing, yeah.
Mm.
But over the last 2 years, I'm waiting on a full hip operation.
Okay.
Again, like Sharon, I was involved in a bad car accident. My father, he died as the result of that. And that's where a lot of people thought that this was all stemming from.
Yeah, stress, trauma, loss.
Yeah. So I am waiting now for 2 years. And I'm in chronic hip pain. My hip is complete bone rubbing on bone. I've seen the x-rays. It's completely worn. And nobody has taken me on board with that.
So you mean to tell me, are you on a waiting list for that?
I have to say, I did attend the hospital in Letterkenny. And he did say to me, the consultant that I was attending said, I'm sending you to Galway because this is more complicated than
so are you the cross-border scheme? Are you a candidate for that?
No, because they can't do it.
Because of the complications.
And well, I'm attending
surely
Galway.
Then we should have a list that prioritises people for whom that option isn't there, like yourself.
Yeah, unfortunately, what Sharon is saying there, because Addison's is not known, it's not, even doctors are not aware of it. They're going to go on what my symptoms are. They're going to go on the endocrinologist and what he will tell them now. But they don't get that chronic pain is absolutely, it's devastating at the moment to me.
Does that complicate your Addison's though? Because we 100%. Talked earlier about emotional, physical, you know.
100%.
So, I do a lot of interviews about things, conditions, and you know, it used to be endometriosis where people couldn't get diagnosed with Lyme disease again. There's a lot of familiarity in this conversation with people that have had Lyme disease, and I think it's really effectively only one or two, a handful of consultants that actually treat it as such. You know, we really need to up our game, Sharon, because we talk about how rare this is. How rare is it, though? How many people are ticking along with it, you know?
There's about 2,000 people in Ireland with it, and I heard this morning, I think it's 8,000 in the UK with it. So I do understand that money...
But do you think it's underdiagnosed?
It could be.
I do believe so.
And I'm just going to interrupt there.
Yeah, no, it's not an interruption, it's fine.
If I had been sent to the psychiatric ward...
You would have died?
I would have died, because... I was going on to renal failure.
And what would you have died of?
Adrenal crisis.
An adrenal crisis.
Yes, attributed to what though? You know what I mean?
What they would have put it down to probably, I don't know, God, I shouldn't even say that. What I think, because my renal function was, I was going on to renal failure.
Yeah.
Also my liver, because it also affects your liver. Mm. And those things, so you're going on to organ failure. So what would it be put down to? They'd probably do maybe a post-mortem on you and then discover that you had Addison's disease that you didn't have.
I wonder.
See, it's not a new find. There are famous people that have had...
John F. Kennedy had it.
JFK. So that's the reason he wore a back brace, because he was on such a high dose of steroid, because his job obviously would have been stressful. He would have had to, you know, meet the public. And as
he
far
would
as...
never have got... They say that they kept it hid because he would never have got to be president.
But that was for different reasons, wasn't it? Sharon, this there's a couple of things that have happened that have been lucky. In your case, Rosemary, it's your sister-in-law and then that one doc in the hospital, right? Maybe you're lucky, if there's any luck in this, Sharon, for you, if that's how you feel, is bumping into this lady.
Absolutely.
Because it sounds like that maybe came just at a time where you needed someone who got you fully. It doesn't matter how supportive we are, our family, friends, brothers, sisters, partners, unless you know it, I'm not sure you can fully be supported.
It's very damaging to your mental health whenever you know inside that, look, this is not just anxiety. There is physical symptoms. Now, I know anxiety can present in a very physical way with panic attacks, which I get as well. But when I met Rosemary, and I could see she brilliant at her job, she could do everything. She was taking the same medicine as me, and I thought, I can get here. You know, I was newly diagnosed, and I thought, if she can do it, you know, she can teach me how to do it. And that's kind of how we gelled. Now, I would ring her mostly all the time now because she still works. I can't really function at work because... I get dizzy a lot and because of the other conditions and on standing, and plus they told me recovery is probably going to be, if even, you know, 12 months to 2 years, you know, even to get on the proper dose I'm on.
But you are, so there is hope of feeling better than you do now.
I'm telling myself that.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a lot better than I was last year. Now I've had one crisis in the last year, which you might think you don't need any, but when I was told that when I presented A&E and they say, we don't know if it's a panic attack or if it's a cortisol thing, and at the weekend in Letterkenny, they can't check your cortisol because they can only do it Monday to Friday.
But if you're prone to panic attacks and anxiety,
yes,
that little bugger in your back of your head's going to start playing up at the weekend.
I know. This is it. And like, he knows me so well now that, you know, he's just saying, look, we'll leave it maybe.
No, I didn't mean your husband. I meant the anxiety in your head.
No, I understand that. Yeah, of course. No, but I'm saying...
I meant how anxiety can play with you.
Yeah. Thankfully, you know, I mean, he knows me so well that he can kind of differentiate between if it's a panic attack.
And you can trust him as well to say, yeah.
Well, he knows me well enough. I'm with him 30 years, so... Yeah. The big thing is when the doctor in Letterkenny tells you, you have to decide whether it's a panic attack or an adrenal crisis. So take both medicines. Now, that's very damaging because there's one of them you don't need. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm already, because I've been given the wrong medicine, I'm already odd about taking any extra stuff that I don't need.
Of course, and I presume it's your liver's processing.
So my liver at the moment, exactly. I'm on a high dose of steroid because I was on such a high dose last year, they had to wean me off. It's like, so what they're saying now is you don't need all this cortisol and you're overdosed on cortisol, but at this stage you're like an addict.
Yeah.
And so they have to try and wean you off it. And when I say stuff like, you know, my daughter's 14 and she heard the word dry out, you know, the other night. It kind of triggered her because she remembered last year.
Yeah.
They went through a hard time, you know, looking at that. So I'm on 40 milligrams and the normal dose would be 20 for anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm on double what I should be. And I know it because what happens is you bloat up.
Okay.
And it because it controls your metabolism, your blood sugar. So everything is all out at the moment, but they're slowly getting it under control and...
Fingers crossed.
Hopefully, you know,
Well, you deserve it, I think. You deserve a break.
I just think there's a lot that goes on in life. We wake up every day, we don't know what, you know, what's ahead of us. And you just hope that you can get up and function for your kids.
There is there is some suggestion of a hereditary nature to this, a genetic nature to it. In some of the research I've done on this in the past, it's there are cases where it's happened in the family, but I'm not sure how sure they are. I don't know, Rosemary, what's your understanding?
Well, I do know that I was in Boots one day and I was getting my hydrocortisone and the lady that was doing up my prescription, she says, do you mind me asking? She says, what are you using? And I said, I have Addison's disease. She told me she had two aunts.
Right.
Two aunts. And they're twins.
Yes.
And a brother as well. So that's three out of the one family that have it. And then I know a lady she's an English lady. She lives here in Donegal. Her sister has it in England. Mm-hmm. So I then asked my endocrinologist, is it hereditary? And he said he didn't think it was. But the only thing that I can say, I had two aunts that had thyroid issues, so they're autoimmune. I have multiple autoimmune diseases. I have pernicious anemia, I have underactive thyroid, then I have the pigmentation.
Do you have to take immune suppressors?
Yes.
You do anyway, Sharon. So that leaves you more vulnerable then to infections and what
exactly.
have you.
Yeah, and they wanted to add, you know, would be like methotrexate would be for lupus. If lupus is very active, it can attack every organ in the body, thankfully.
Yeah, because I think that's what autoimmune is, isn't it?
It doesn't
know what to attack, yeah. So it can attack healthy parts of you.
Yeah,
and because you're on steroids, you don't always know that you're... that you're sick, believe it or not.
Yeah,
sometimes I've gone in and they went, actually, you have an infection here and we need to treat it. And
which is good if they can regulate that a bit lower. It will give you a better certainty of your...
I'm well on it and I'm trying to be in control of it. It's just whenever I drop, I'm like you, whenever I take even 5 milligrams less, I find the symptoms come back and you get very sick. And it is just an adjustment, and it's just because I've been on such a high dose for a long time.
It just is going to take a long time.
A long time, yeah. With no stress, which, and a house with four children and running your own.
I think maybe the normal stressors that people have, it doesn't affect that as much. It's more if it's a heavy stress. Mm. Like if you've maybe a family issue going on, maybe, yes. Like I remember my mother had a stroke and I didn't know at that time. That was 2015. And I didn't realise that I had to increase my steroids.
Yeah, I don't know, Sharon, how prominent your anxiety is or what have you. But funny, if you have anxiety, right, you could often deal quite well with the situation like you described, and then stuff that really perhaps you should be able to treat quite well, or there's nothing there at all, that's what can send you doolally. Because I would have suffered quite a lot with anxiety, but I'm brilliant in an emergency.
Yeah, because
give me a room on my own.
Yeah, and then
because you're functioning with the adrenaline that's running through you, the fight or flight is in full. Yeah. Full fight, but you will often find, I don't know if you find it, you can deal with the crisis at the time. You know, like you can deal
it's the
with
fallout.
It's maybe one or 2 days later, he notices then I'll collapse.
Do you know what? That's kind of interesting because, like, there's people in this building and others who would be in work through the elections or be involved in plays or what have you, and see 2 or 3 days after it's finished.
Yes.
There must be just this drop of resistance because then the colds happen. It's almost like adrenaline's keeping you going. So that would talk to really what you're talking about, Sharon, that in the moment you're great, but there is a hangover from it down the line, and that's maybe when it hits.
For me, anyway, it comes, I use all the cortisol for that day, and then because the next day you're still taking the same dosage, or maybe you have doubled up, but it's not enough to deal with, like there was one time my cortisol was 5, which it should be 600 in the morning, the range.
That's
should be,
the level.
That's the level it should be at.
It's so, say between 400 and 600 as the level in the morning.
That's your sweet spot where you want to have
so
it.
So that's what you would have as, you know, everything functioning. And then it's called the cortisol curve. So then at 2 o'clock, that kind of reduces down to maybe 400.
Yes.
And then in the evening, you get all the stressors in the day, you get about 200, it gets to about 200 or 100, and then you can sleep at night time because if you have too much cortisol, you can't sleep.
So how are you testing that? Is it a prick test or?
We just have to go and get it. I had mine done there at Christmas and I got a phone call from the doctor. First thing in the morning, your cortisol's reading at 4.
4?
4.
Like 0.4 compared to 400.
400, yes. Yeah. So what I had done, I knew it would be reading at that because what I had done, I wanted to see what was it without my steroid.
Yep.
So, and that's one of the things that the endocrinologist would ask you to do as well.
Yeah, you get a bit of control and understanding,
just to see,
do you?
Okay. Yeah, what you're reading at.
So when we talk of the symptoms, I'm just curious about the low blood pressure. Would you find yourself that perhaps if you went to the GP and had your blood pressure checked, it would be fine? Do you have spells of low pressure or is it a consistent low pressure? Because I'm thinking that people might feel like that and then they go to the GP and they're talking, your blood pressure's spot on, 120 over 80, happy days.
Now, when I would go on to the doctor, when I had sort of like a mini crisis. Now, I've never had to do what Sharon has had to do, never had to phone an ambulance or anything, just the first time initially I had to. But we were on holiday, not there October, but the October before that, so hot weather. So bad.
Oh, it's bad.
Oh my God. Okay. It's a nightmare.
You lose all your fluid or all your water and all your electrolytes.
And when we talk about kidney functioning being low, this is why you didn't wee for so long, I presume, is it? Yeah.
Sorry,
you didn't.
Your kidney function isn't low. You didn't pee for 24
hours.
Is that part?
That would be because I was going on then to a complete crisis.
Okay. Renal failure.
Renal failure. And that's what happens. But I came home from holidays and people don't understand this as well. I'd say, I dread going on holidays because I sat in with air conditioning on the whole time. Yeah. I come back. The colour of that cup there.
Yeah.
Because I can't sit out in the
Sharon,
sun.
Sharon, are you the same?
I'm the exact same. Yeah. And my husband would, you know, and to try and alleviate stress, he would say, let's go away to wherever and we'll take the children with us. And that to me is the worst thing. I know. And he doesn't understand that. He thinks he's trying to, you know, help you out. But when I get there, even to get there, to get on the plane, the stressor of being on a plane and nobody knowing what to do, even though I have him.
But the pressure not to disappoint is also
And then there's that. And I think, you know, he's living half a life here with this going on. And look, it is many people with chronic diseases and chronic management of them, like they will understand this. It's, you feel guilty.
Yeah, it changes your life. Addison's has changed my life completely.
Yeah.
It changes it in every way. There's things that you cannot do that other people can do. And you're always wishing and thinking, oh, if only I could, if only I could. Even just the simplest thing is sitting out in the sun. And I wouldn't be a sun worshipper anyway, but it would be nice.
But you don't have
nice.
The choice. You
don't
like
have that
choice. Yeah.
You can't. And you have to make sure that you're drinking loads of water.
Or taking a drink on holidays.
Oh, I mean, you can't. Yeah.
You can't. You know, no. So, and I used to, you know, I used to be out partying, you know, from 20 to 30. And it just changed for me overnight because, you know.
It's a lot. It takes a lot from you, doesn't it? Like, and I think that goes right back to the very start. You're just sitting here and you just look great, right? But it takes so much from you.
Oh, it does. It definitely changes your life. Mm. And as Sharon says, it does make you very anxious as well. Because there are people at work and they'll say, we'll go on holidays. We should go away for a weekend. And I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go away with anybody that wouldn't know the condition that I have, even though they know that I have Addison's, but they don't know the ins and outs of it.
You see, that comes down to the anxiety part of it as well. Anxiety is all linked with cortisol. Mm. If you haven't got the mechanism to deal with stress, if you're given something stressful to do and you don't have the cortisol to deal with it, you are going to get panicked and then the adrenaline starts to run through you and it comes on like a panic attack. I would take a lot of, you were asking about blood pressure there, I would take a lot of dizzy spells. So when I stand up, my blood pressure plummets. I've always had low blood pressure since I was, you know, maybe 18 to 19, 20. But this was different because when I was standing up, it was dropping.
Yeah,
by 30, you know.
Wow.
So, and they were saying, look, when it does that, that's a symptom of your adrenal glands not producing enough cortisol. Mm. But then it's actually a symptom of POTS as well. So I'm sort of in a crossover.
Yeah, I think yours is complex case. And I think you're still working through where everything is at to some extent.
So it's like diabetes 1 there, you know, where you can take a long acting insulin. And then if you're in trouble, you know, if you get anything wrong, you can take a short-acting insulin. Mm. So it's much the same as that. You can take a long-acting cortisol. And then if you're in trouble, we have short-acting.
Yeah. Do you get big highs then because of the hormones that are being triggered here, like excessive bouts of happiness?
You referenced
fight or flight a little earlier on. I was just wondering, does it...
I would say more panic with me, more lows with me.
Okay.
I would agree. If you're not getting enough cortisol, you will have more. You will have lows. Like even at the moment, that's what we've been chatting
and
about.
And then how do you feel like you're in a bad mood or you're good mood? It must be frustrating, you know, like, because it'd be nice to know when you're just in a bad mood because someone's pissed you off, right? Rather than it being cortisone.
It.
Like, you know.
That's why I find it very difficult to manage because sometimes I don't, is it just my anxiety or is it my adrenal glands working, you know, and trying to figure that out.
The kids driving me nuts because they drive me nuts or is it because I need a jag?
I think it's important then that you have people around you that understand you and knew you. And, you know, like you, you've been with your husband for the same length of time.
Yeah, and like they understand, but there's things that we understand more from each other.
Which is wonderful that you've found each other.
And I think the anxiety is the biggest one because... It's not clinical depression or clinical anxiety. It's none of that we have. It's due to low cortisol that you get these.
Okay.
The big one was the butterflies. We used to go
into... That really is an interesting... So what is actually happening there? Is that an emotional trigger or is that a physical... It's a physical reaction.
So say you're adrenaline.
Yeah.
And you're maybe excited about going somewhere and you can feel these butterflies in your stomach. So these are completely different, though. It's not
it's the intensity.
It's like something you want to just, if you could just.
I'm not even going to talk about this in pregnancy.
So I
think we need to do another hour on that.
I got pregnant with Addison's disease, and it was a very high risk pregnancy. Right. So, but she's great. Because I had to continue taking steroids, but because my case is different to Rosemary, I had to reduce the steroids, and I actually found myself through the pregnancy getting better.
Yeah.
And
but that's maybe the wonder of pregnancy and how it can sort of.
Oh, it was because I was told
fiddle around with stuff.
We were actually told at the start, you know, you shouldn't continue with the pregnancy, which was just a no go for us. You know, there's no way. It was a blessing in every way possible, and she was born. Now she did have a heart block because of the steroid dose, and she had feeding problems, and she after 6 months. The hole in the heart had closed over, and the cardiologist in Crumlin said the healthiest baby he'd ever seen. Okay. So she's completely recovered. But that pregnancy in itself on the body was severe. Even during the labour, I had to have, you know, I had a consultant come up from Galway every 2 weeks to see me. He was an endocrinologist anyway. So he would have come up to see all the diabetic pregnant girls anyway, but they seemed to know a lot about Addison's disease, and you're very thankful when somebody comes in and understands the condition.
I'm going to go back to your doctor, Rosemary. I don't think this should be by chance or by location. I don't think where you're from should really be should expedite you getting a diagnosis. Right, as we wrap up, either of the two of you, is there anything, or both of you at the same time, is there anything that it's one of those conditions, right, that's so rare, but we might reach someone that is go in that sort of period where they're being told nothing's wrong with you or everything's wrong with you except what's wrong with you. So hopefully we don't hope anyone's in that situation, but if they need to hear what they've heard today, well then that's going to be good. But going forward, what or anything else that might have been on your mind that you thought important to mention?
Well, just if for me, I just had two things there. So doses of prednisolone over a series, you know, if you're taking
it. Is this the steroid?
This is the steroid. Yep. Now, it is a very well-known steroid. It's given for everything. But just I wanted people to be aware that it can cause your adrenal glands to suppress.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was in with a GP the other day, and he actually said, you know, even topical steroids, you know, that you put in your arms, he knows somebody that got Addison's disease from overuse of those.
Wow.
So I just wanted people to be aware. And the other thing is if you're presenting with these kind of vague symptoms, but you know that there's something wrong, they do the normal bloods with you in the hospital. Maybe just ask outside the box, do a cortisol test.
Yeah.
It might not be that, but it's just such a random test. Even if we go to A&E, they don't do a cortisol test. So I have to tell them now when I go there.
Okay. Would you concur, Rosemary?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the cortisol would be one of the main for anybody that would be, anybody that would have the symptoms that we would have had, just to, and I know other people can have different symptoms
we're not doctors, but you've been through the cortisol. Would that pick up the underactive, overactive thyroid? Is that, that's not that?
That came up
through something separately.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you have your thyroid.
Often the bloods just seem all okay. Like Rosemary said, all her bloods were okay, and then they were going to send her to a psychiatric ward. Very similar to me. Mm. All your bloods are okay. It's just anxiety, and we might need to assess your psychiatric treatment. And then, lo and behold, then when they checked the cortisol, they went, actually, hold on, she has a cortisol deficiency.
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right, that's important,
I think.
Listen, thank you so much to both of you for calling in for a conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us as well.
And I just want to, again, thank both Rosemary McFadden and Sharon Flanagan, both with Addison's disease, both very different journeys, but life decided to put them together too at the same time, such is life. But both of you, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And a big thank you once again to Rosemary and Sharon. Okay, if you enjoyed this episode of the Greg Hughes Podcast, don't forget to check out the past episodes available on the website, highlandradio.com, on Spotify and iTunes, and keep an eye out every Friday where we release a new episode. If you have any comments, feedback or suggestions, don't forget you can email the researcher and producer of this podcast, Caroline Orr. Her address, Caroline Orr at HighlandRadio.com. Until we chat again,